During its day, in the 1880s, it was extremely well known. It was the subject of parades and monuments and best-selling books, and it was like we sent these guys to the dark side of the moon, and everyone wanted to know how they were faring. And as the news began to trickle in after 3 years, the whole world, and particularly here in the United States, people were gripped by it.
Let's talk about life at this time. I mean, this is, you know, more than a decade after the end of the Civil War. What kind of interest was there in the U.S. in exploring the Arctic when the Jeannette set sail?
Well, America was in the grip of polar fever. It was just, you know, this nagging, gnawing obsession to know what was at the top of the world. We had recently purchased Alaska from the Russians. We were emerging from the devastation of the Civil War and beginning to kind of flex our muscles on the world stage and try to compete with the European powers. And this was a way to do it without fighting a war. But it was just this incredible curiosity to know what's up there. And I do try to kind of scrape back the layers of what we know to be true now and try to get into the heads of what people back then, what the thinkers and explorers and map makers thought was up there. Lots of crazy theories, but one of those theories was this notion that there was a warm body of water up there, and if you could just bust through the ice, you would have smooth sailing to the North Pole. It sounds kind of crazy, but it's an idea that went back to the Greeks and the Vikings, and this was an expedition designed to test it once and for all.
And without giving too much away, I mean, what happens when the Jeannette tries to sail to the North Pole?
Well, they leave San Francisco in the summer of 1879. Captain George DeLong and his 32 men, 40 dogs, three open boats on board this vessel, the USS Jeannette, which had been reinforced for the ice. They went through the Bering Strait. They looked for this warm water current. So they never found this kind of gateway to the pole that they were looking for. What they found, not surprisingly, was ice. And in September, they got caught in the ice, and they drifted in the ice pack for 2 years. During this two-year period, they aren't exactly suffering. They're just very slowly kind of going crazy. But finally, the ship is crushed by the enormous pressure of the ice pack, and it sinks to the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. And the men and their dogs and some of their belongings and these three open boats are out there on the ice pack. And it becomes then a survival story, a story of how to get to safety. And they're about 1,000 miles from the nearest landmass, which is the central Arctic coast of Siberia. So they have to drag their belongings over the ice during the summer of 1881. They do it since 92 days of struggling over the ice. And it is truly one of the great, harrowing survival stories of all time. And they do make it to open water, and they do sail for Siberia. And then and what happens after that, I kind of leave for the readers to figure out. It is an amazing story of comradeship, of leadership, of men sticking together through thick and thin to try to make it to safety.
And it's a story that, I mean, you piece together. How did you piece together this story to get a complete book?
Well, luckily, all the officers on the expedition wrote their own accounts. Many of them kept journals or diaries. Several of them wrote books after they got home that became quite popular in the 1880s. There was also a naval inquiry and a congressional hearing, both which produced thousands of pages of testimony. So, you know, there's just a lot of raw, you know, primary documents to work with, thank God. I also went to Siberia and I tried to retrace the steps of the voyage and then their trek overland and through the tundra. I went to some places that are really, really hard to get to and really would be almost impossible to get to now, given our current state of our relations with Russia right now. But it was a fascinating thing to do, and I just, you know, wanted to try to understand that part of the world and understand the tundra, and particularly this place called the Lena Delta in central Siberia where they made landfall. So that's kind of how I pieced it together. Luckily, there was no shortage of raw material to work with.
Looking to the future, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on a new book, which is about a storied, very harrowing and epic battle in the Korean War, which is certainly one of, if not the foremost, forgotten war that we have, I think. And I've met some of these veterans who fought in this battle. It's called the Battle of Chosin Reservoir. Early in the war, in 1950, 10,000 Marines were completely surprised and surrounded by 100,000 Chinese soldiers who had just entered the war. And this was high in the mountains in 20 below zero weather. And these Marines had to somehow fight their way out of this entrapment. And it's something that's storied and celebrated by the Marines. And it's a battle that really makes the Korean War, for me, come alive.
Hampton Sides is the author of In the Kingdom of Ice, and he's a guest of the National Writer Series. Thanks for making time.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it, and really, really excited about this National Writer Series. It's on the national radar screen. It's truly become one of those things that writers all over the country know about and want to participate in. So it's an honor to be invited.
And you're listening to Morning Edition on IPR News.